Dan Lloyd Corner in the Flemish Ardennes. Welcome to the GCN show.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, with the world of ultra endurance continually reaching new extremes, we're wondering if there's a point where it becomes too unsafe. Alex McCormack just rode an eye-watering 3,826 kilometres in a week. We'll be speaking to him about his new world record.
We'll also talk about what Connor has in common with Pogacar, plus why he received a driving ban after he won the Tour of Flanders on Sunday, plus the return of the controversial 32-inch wheel debate, the announcement of the winner of our Sell Italia giveaway, and a brand new one from our helmet partners, HJC. This week in the world of cycling, we learn that Paul Sagan is increasingly looking like the rider who has the potential to knock the all-conquering Tadej Pogacar from his throne.
The Frenchman, who was already being touted as the next big thing in the sport, only underlined that potential with his ridiculously dominant win in the opening TT of the Tour of the Basque Country yesterday.
Whilst Pogacar, Vingegaard and Evenepoel were not at the race, he made the likes of Primoz Roglic, Florian Lipovic, Juan Ayuso and Isaac Del Toro look distinctly average on the day. His time gap over second place Kevin Vaucelat was so big he was a full 1 kilometre per hour faster than anybody else on the day.
That is crazy, isn't it?
Unbelievable.
That is crazy. And he's still only 19, which is, I guess, even more scary. We also learned that Mathieu van der Poel was apparently riding at 650 watts on the Quermont at the moment he was dropped by Pogacar.
That according to the man himself in his post-race interview. So in answer to the question that Connor here posed on last week's Racing News show, is it enough? The answer was a resounding no.
But what can you do against the best rider of a generation, arguably the best rider ever?
Sit on him, I'd say.
I think that might be easier said than done.
Yes, it might be worth a try though.
Yeah.
If you've got the talent of Mathieu van der Poel. Anyway, more on that race, the Tour of Flanders, later on in the show. But finally this week, we learnt that ultra endurance records are getting genuinely bonkers.
Yeah, last week, British ultra rider Alex McCormack put down an incredible effort to beat the world record for the furthest distance ridden in 1 week. A pretty eye-watering 3,826 kilometres. That's around 500 kilometres more than the Tour de France. The biggest race in the world, and that's covered in 3 weeks.
Yeah. Now, the stats from the ride are also bonkers. So riding up and down a 150k loop along the Moselle River, Alex spent 18 and a half hours per day in the saddle on average. 168 hours of total riding, 14,000 calories a day, 546 kilometres a day, average again, Connor, with one whopping final push of 727 kilometres. And apparently, he only slept for 1 hour in the last 40 hours of riding.
It is mad. What an incredible effort. And it surpassed the previous record set by Latvian Sprud Arvis in July 2024 by just 12 kilometres, which is such a small margin after so long on the bike. And from the sounds of it, that last section must have been torture.
But I think beyond torture.
Yeah.
He did it on a fully tricked out Canyon Speedmax, and Alex's efforts came as part of Canyon's new all-terrain team, which is a collection of riders from different backgrounds in like gravel, road, ultra endurance. And this record attempt was one of their first key challenges of 2026.
Are these sort of efforts the new normal? We've seen how gravel racing has changed in recent years, becoming ever more professional and pushing the limits of performance in that discipline. Mm-hmm. I, for one, am really excited about the emergence of mixed discipline teams that lead to efforts like this.
Yeah, well, I mean, any world record is, of course, impressive. It's a world record. But for me, ultra endurance world records just hit a bit differently, I would say. I've said it before, I'm going to say it again now, Connor. The mere thought of having to try something like that fills me with fear. I mean, obviously, I just wouldn't be able to do it anyway. I'm not capable. But I would never have even contemplated it at any point in my life, not for a single second.
It is certainly impressive to witness, but I also feel like these sort of efforts are so superhuman that they're best left to the professionals, as Alex is
absolutely,
in this case, going full-time for the team and taking on these sort of challenges. He will also be taking on the Colorado Trail Race, Arizona Trail Race and Tour de Vive, which is kind of considered the triple crown of ultra-endurance events in the USA.
Mm. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah. Imagine doing that effort and thinking, I've got three more big events coming up later on.
And they
are
big ones too.
We should point out there was a doctor on hand for his entire effort last week, which just goes to show how deep Alex was prepared to go and what sort of backup and planning that you need to safely take on a challenge that's that extreme. But to find out exactly how he found the attempt, Connor actually caught up with him to get his thoughts.
Alex, amazing to talk to you on the GCN show. I just wanted to hear from you, how are you feeling now? Because what a mammoth effort.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. I guess, yeah, it's been a few days now, and yesterday was the first day I got through that, having to nap in the day. So that's progress, but we're getting there. It's when your head can't hold your neck up, it's something you take for granted. So it's nice that it's working again.
I mean, you're looking miraculously fresh considering what you've just been through last week. But I'd love to know, like, how did this record attempt come about, and why did you want to go for it?
Yeah, so it's been something I've had a bit of an eye on for a while. Sort of the supported style efforts is something quite different to the unsupported bikepacking races that I usually do. So just having that like full team backing and seeing like how far I can actually push myself is something I've been interested in. And yeah, sort of the 7-day record made sense for me for that. And yeah, it might be a bit of a learning and a bit of a warm up for some other bigger stuff to hopefully come in the future.
Amazing. And like, what was the hardest part? Is there an answer to that? Because I mean, it looked like you had terrible weather and some super long days. So yeah, what did you personally find most difficult?
I think it compounded throughout the week. So like I said, the first half of the week, the weather was terrible. It was like pretty much battling hypothermia and having to stop every 5 hours and have warm showers, hot meals, change clothes. So that at the time was pretty rough, but I think that sort of then compounded on and into the back end of the week when fatigue and just the toll it took on the body was actually pretty intense. So that the last morning before that final 750K push was, yeah, I love riding my bike and I hate quitting, but it was definitely more about hating quitting at that point than liking riding the bike.
Wow. And I read that you did the last 40 hours on just 1 hour sleep. Is that true?
It was about that, yeah. And to be honest, it might even have been less. I said to my crew, I'll have an hour sleep. And I think they woke me up after 45 minutes and told me it was an hour and to crack on. So yeah, we left the ride down to the wire, but we managed to get it done.
Incredible. It came down to such a margin as well after so long like on the bike. What was the best bit for you of the whole week?
I think just having the team around, like I say, for me, having a support group is a novelty, and just, you know, having friendly faces, people like genuinely there helping me out. And like every time I pulled in, they'd have meals ready, like pretty much just catered to my every need was, yeah, that's pretty special. So to have such a good team, yeah, really rated that.
And like, obviously it was like an insane performance. I mean, you've pushed the limits so far here. Do you think there's a point where you can push the limits a bit too far?
I think I was close to doing that on this ride for sure. I think if this had been a self-supported effort, like the standard racing I do, then I definitely have had to stop earlier and got more sleep. But I think, you know, in my head, I was able to sort of shun a bit of that decision making and some of the safety element to the people around me who were in a much better mental state, and sort of just trust their decision and for them to pull the plug if it got too far. But, you know, they were all still happy, so I kept plugging on.
Unbelievable. Congratulations again. It was amazing to see you do it, because it did look in the midway point that you were like potentially not quite there. Were you doubting yourself?
There was definitely points where I was like, I think it might have slipped away here. But again, I sort of kept running the numbers in my head, and that's a big part of what kept me occupied throughout the day. Would be like, I knew what average speed I could hold, and I knew what power I could hold, and potentially how much sleep I could forgo. And yeah, sort of the numbers, you got to stay positive. You know, as soon as you let the head go, it's game over. So yeah, I tried to stay as positive as possible about reaching that target, and yeah, somehow pulled it off.
Amazing. Well, congratulations again, and we're really looking forward to seeing what you get up to for the remainder of the year. It sounds like you've got some big challenges in store. So best of luck with everything you're planning to take on. Incredible speaking to Alex there. I think he's very modest about his own achievements, actually, as it was a real superhuman effort. Really interesting to hear him speak about how he felt he could push further with a support team around him versus when he's taken on unsupported efforts in the past. Sounds like if he'd been on his own, he might have called it sooner. But being able to trust the team to make judgments for him in terms of his own safety during the event, allowed him to push further.
Yeah. It's just a different effort, isn't it? Ultra cycling versus professional cycling. Now, each is impressive, obviously, but both push the boundaries differently in terms of what the human body and mind, I guess, is capable of.
Yeah, I think when we see the likes of, like, Tadej Pogačar putting down these incredible performances and power numbers on relatively shorter efforts, and then you have the totally different approach of seeing how the human body can power on for longer than we ever thought possible.
I think when you compare efforts like Alex has just done to pro cyclists on the World Tour, it's also a case of looking at how resilient they are in different ways. So Alex dealt with a severe lack of sleep, for starters, plus dreadful, quite unseasonable weather conditions.
Yeah, I don't think there's many pro cyclists, actually, who will be able to face that and stay healthy.
Probably not.
Even when I was fully fit, racing, I think put into an effort like that, I'd have crumbled so quickly.
Yeah.
It really is superhuman.
I was going to say I'd have crumbled after one day, but it wouldn't have even been that, like half a day. We're also seeing more ultra-endurance efforts being taken on with a more professional approach, as we mentioned. So if we look at Leah Wilcox's efforts to break the round-the-world record as a key example, she's also been very busy posting a recent training ride for that record attempt from Austin, Texas, riding 1,276 miles in 5 days and 10 hours.
Yeah, I can't wait to see her take on that attempt. Right. And personally, I think it's great how riders are increasingly getting the support to go after these big challenges and get a unique opportunity, I guess, to redefine the limits of human performance. But let us know in the comments what you think. Do these sort of efforts inspire you as much as it does us?
Or you.
Yeah, me. Or do you worry, like Dan, about what these limits are being pushed to? Of course, a big congratulations to Alex.
Oh, massive congratulations, yeah, well done. Now, personally, though, I do worry about it, as you've just alluded to, Connor. In the same way that I worry a bit about the world of free ride, I think it's called, in mountain biking. By that, I mean events like the Red Bull Rampage. My worry is that in order to keep viewers tuning in year after year, the size of the jumps and the drops they tackle, the lines they take there, inevitably have to get more and more extreme. Because people, fans, are not going to continue to watch it if they're seeing exactly the same jumps and tricks as they were 5 years ago. I mean, things always progress in the world, of course, but when a sport is as dangerous as that already, I just worry about the progression.
Well, case in point, last year, Adolf Silva had a horrific crash at that event, which has left him paralysed from the chest down.
Yeah, just absolutely awful. Now, I'm not saying that the world of ultra-endurance cycling is exactly the same, but you can at least draw parallels. The lengths that these people are going to are getting more and more extreme, and I just don't want to see it result in life-changing injuries for anyone, or even worse.
I know what you mean. I mean, having had a bit of experience myself in some ultra-endurance events, I feel like I have gotten quite an insight into just how ridiculously hard the top riders are able to push themselves. It is impressive. But as you said, it's only going to get more and more extreme, isn't it?
Well, it can only go one way, really, can't
it,
if you want to beat records. As Connor said earlier, let us know your thoughts in the comment section just down below. Right, just before we move on, a reminder, we currently have some special edition Classics T-shirts, which are available over at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com.
Yeah, you'll also see our Spring Classics print still for sale. There is a collection of five available, all come framed in either an A3 or A4 size. And we're really delighted, actually, with how well received these have been. So thanks to everyone who's been and made a purchase. It's a massive help to us funding all our videos here at GCN.
Yeah.
I would say I've got an example of one. There's one down there next to you, Dan.
That was it.
There we go.
That's one of the Spring Classics prints, which have been proving very popular, as Connor says. So yeah, thank you very much.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we'll start with a quick wrap-up of our thoughts on last weekend's Tour of Flanders. We are in Holy Week now. Yeah, it is like Christmas for cyclists. Basically, between two of the biggest cobbled one-day races of the year. I love it. I love
it. Exactly the same. It's the most wonderful time of the year, to quote the song. There were no presents, though, handed out on Sunday, but rather two riders in their pomp taking very deserved victories. Demi Vollering, the European champion, won the women's in what was, surprisingly, her first ever win in a cobbled monument, whilst Tadej Pogačar won the men's in what was, unsurprisingly, a dominant ride from start to finish.
That marked his fourth consecutive monument victory, a feat never seen before. And this Sunday, he has the opportunity to make it five as he lines up for Paris-Roubaix for the second time.
That's going to be so interesting on Sunday, isn't it? All being well, actually, we'll have our big Paris-Roubaix preview show out for you tomorrow. You'll be able to find that over on the GCN Racing channel.
Philippe Ganna, meanwhile, had a cracking win at Dorsdorf-Vlaanderen before that. He also caused some controversy by also receiving a 200 Swiss franc fine for a sticky bottle. And honestly, my thoughts on this are that if you've had a mechanical, I think a sticky bottle has always been the accepted way of getting back on. It's
kind of, yeah, or at least being allowed to slipstream behind other teams' cars. I mean, it is against the rules, strictly speaking, but I always give the example that if you're in a stage race, I know that wasn't a stage race, but if you're in, say, let's say, stage three of the Tour de France, you have a mechanical problem near the beginning when everything's flat out, the breakaway's trying to go. If you weren't allowed to slipstream behind a vehicle and you weren't allowed a sticky bottle, you'd be out of the race. Mm. Doesn't matter how strong you are. Perhaps unless your entire team drops back, but unless you're one of the big champions, that's not going to happen. So you'd literally be out of the race because of a puncture, which I do feel would be unfair. So that's why they do sometimes turn a blind eye to what we saw there. We also saw a slightly bizarre surprise announcement from Remco Evenepoel last week before the Tour of Flanders that he would be lining up at the race. Because it was April Fool's Day at the time of that announcement, it did take a while for us to be confident enough to believe it, but a YouTube video on his channel, which was filmed back in December, confirmed that it was indeed true. And it turns out it was a very good decision by him and his team, wasn't it? Because he was very impressive, especially for a debut rider, finishing third.
Yeah, I, for one, was really excited, actually, to see him take the race on.
Great for Belgium as well.
Yeah,
another, another big rider cheering their home race.
Yeah. Sticking with racing for just a moment more, though, today Pogacar has been busy on social media, keeping partners happy everywhere, even if they're buying a Y1 RS. This gentleman's wife saying he could only get the Kounago Superbike if Tour de France winner, today Pogacar, commented on his post, which today Julie did, reminding him to remember a present for the boss of the house. And it made me chuckle, that one.
Yeah, that was quite good. I mean, not in a million years, I imagine that she thought Pogacar might comment on the post and he'd get his dream bike. Although being Tadej Pogacar didn't stop the Belgian police from apparently weighing up giving him an 8-day driving ban after he, amongst others, ran a red light during Sunday's Tour of Flanders. Now, that was at a train crossing, most of you will have watched it by now, when the lights went red as half the bunch were midway across those tracks.
Yeah, it's quite an unusual situation, this. Although the very same actually happened to me in Skeldepre.
Oh, this is the parallel. This is what you've got in common with Tadej Pogacar, isn't it? This is great. He was telling me earlier.
It's really, I mean, so I got disqualified from Skeldepre for doing the exact same thing with a lot of other riders in the race. In my defence, it's really hard to react. You're in the line out, you're going super fast, concentrating on the race, and then in my situation, it sounds like it was the same in Flanders, the barriers, the lights came on, the barriers started coming down midway through the bunch. So I was just following wheels and then I was on the train tracks and then you realise that you should have stopped and it was a red light, which you just don't expect. And I think I got disqualified about 40 or 50 other riders.
Well, also something I was saying to you before we started recording the show, when you're in that race mode and mentality, you really aren't thinking sensibly, are you?
No.
Literally, your whole job and your entire thought process is stick to the wheel in front, don't get dropped, at least in our case. Other people might say, let's go on the attack soon. And so you just don't think about the dangers. That goes for descents, but also goes for things like train crossings like that. The big question I guess everyone's got though, Connor, is did you receive and serve an 8-day driving ban for that offence?
No, I didn't. Yeah. I didn't, but I did get lost trying to find my way back to the finish after I got thrown off the race.
Got on train. So
punishment. I couldn't find out. I had a clue where I was. I was just in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Oh, that's happened to me before, getting lost after being dropped.
Yeah.
Before the days of GPS.
Well, exactly. And you don't have your phone on you. You've got no money.
It's happened to so many pros, hasn't it?
Yeah.
In the past. Right, next up, this event caught our eye. It's called the Tweed Run. If you're into your slow cycling, we think that this could be for you.
I can't believe we've never been to this. It looks absolutely amazing. I feel like we should go, Dan.
Well, I'm into slow cycling these days.
I think you'd enjoy this.
Not necessarily out of choice, but I'm into it.
Well, basically the idea of this is you take on a ride through London with about 1,000 other cyclists and you have to use the most vintage bike possible. So you have to dress in tweed, and I have to quote the other kind of stuff you have to wear for this, because I haven't got a clue what any of it means, but it's basically tweed suits, plus fours, bow ties, and jaunty flat caps. They were all encouraged.
Jaunty flat caps.
I genuinely don't know what that is.
Borrow one from Hank.
That's true, actually.
I bet he's got a big collection. Yeah.
There's also a morning muster of champagne, a stop on Savile Row, and a mid-ride picnic and tea stop. I love it. Saturday the 18th of April, if you like your bike rides with a dose of heavy Scottish wool.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea of it. I'm not sure I'm going to get my outfit ready in time. Anyway, as we mentioned earlier, April Fool's Day was last week, and there were a variety of jokes that nearly caught us out. Personally, we love the Precision Fuel and Hydration IKEA inspired product collection. Those underpants, Connor's told me off camera, he's actually already messaged Precision Fuel and Hydration to see if they'll send him a pair alongside his usual monthly shipment of gels and ride fuel.
They did look great, to be fair. But anyway, moving on from my potential new undies. One bike I'd love to ride is this. I've been following the kind of 32-inch wheel buzz with interest. Check this one out from Naked Bikes from Canada. They make handmade custom bikes, and their latest 32-inch wheel gravel bike I think was particularly interesting.
Mountain bike legend Jeff Kabush is also a fan, and he's going to be riding it at this year's Sea Otter, which is coming up soon.
Yeah, I think for me personally, what I'm so excited about the 32-inch wheels is I'd love to give them a go because, well, I'm so tall, I feel that it makes sense for me. Obviously, I've tried a 36-inch wheel bike, but I think 32 could be the sweet spot. So watch the space.
I'm going out on a limb here, Connor, but I don't think you needed to explain why you in particular are quite excited by this 32-inch wheel revolution, but thanks for doing it anyway.
One area, though, where I think we should see 32-inch wheels is Zwift. They'd definitely work well, especially in their new gravel world.
Ah, I like your segue there, Connor. Yes, you were riding this, you were telling me earlier.
I was, yeah. Built around Gravel Mountain, the new routes on Zwift have been designed to kind of like recreate more challenging technical nature of gravel riding racing. And I did actually give it a go last night. It's very different to racing on the asphalt routes. I literally went so wide on the first corner.
Well, understandably, given that you told me you didn't realise that you needed to steer.
It was a bit of a last-minute decision to jump on Zwift. It was 2 minutes before the race. So, yeah, I wasn't the best prepared for it.
Anyway, to celebrate the start of this, Zwift have launched the Power Racing Series. Four different races and routes over 4 weeks with hourly slots to suit when you ride. There are also five new gravel bikes to unlock, new kit, and loads of XP points for completing that series.
OK, we're going to finish Cycling Shorts this week with a brand new giveaway for you all. But first up, we're going to reveal the winner of our recent Sella Italia competition.
Yep, this was your chance to get your hands on a Sella Italia SLR 3D Carbon Opal White saddle and matching bar tape. I think it's time for a drum roll, Connor. Ready?
Yep.
Congratulations to... CB.
CB. Well done, CB. If you're wondering why it's just their initials, they asked to remain anonymous. Yeah. We'll be in contact with you soon if we haven't been already. And if you missed out, don't worry, because this week you've got the chance to win one of three HGC Bellas 2 helmets. This one only open to UK and European residents, and you can find the link in the description below.
You can indeed. All you need to do, though, is tell us how many colours the Bellas 2 helmet comes in. Answer on a postcard, or more preferably, if you want to win the helmet via that link in the description just down below. The giveaway is open from today and it will run through to 10 a.m. BST on April the 17th.
Good luck, everyone.
Good luck. Next up, it is of course time for Hack / Bodge of the Week. Got five for you this week. First up, this one from Hug Cycles, who put stuck seat post in carbon frame. I acquired a Carbon Bianchi, not checking the aluminium post had corroded into the carbon frame and it wasn't at my required height. I tried many methods to remove the stubborn post, even resorting to clamping the post in a vise using various penetrating fluids, hot and cold methods, but the post showed no sign of moving. My thought now was either I'm going to try harder, risking damage to the frame, or free it. Then I had a light bulb moment. The current post was a 30.9mm large diameter, and my thought was, what if the internal diameter, I could use a standard smaller fitting post within it? So I got my trusty hacksaw, and before cutting the post plush with the top of the seat tube, I told myself the frame is toast anyway, followed by elbow action. After a short while, the tingling of alloy rang through the air. I then filed the burrs down before getting the veneer calipers out. Measuring once, twice, three times, I couldn't believe it. Either I was lucky, or just a luck fool, 27.2 millimetres exactly. Rustling through my post bin. Have you got one of them, Connor?
Post bin?
Seat post bin?
No.
But Alex probably has, hasn't he? Rustling through my post bin, I found two of such size, a perfect fit, trying both posts for reassurance. Bingo! Now for fitment and safety, I drilled a hole at the bottom of the clamping area split before getting Old Faithful out again to cut either side to mirror the slot. After some more filing, a good clean and a bit of grease, alloy and alloy, I placed the clamping and inserted the post, torquing it up, and there you have it. Back to a usable state, albeit a little bit heavier, but saved from landfill.
I think that's a really good effort.
Fantastic effort.
Fantastic, yeah. Definite hack.
Yeah, I'm like I said, it would have been in the landfill otherwise because it wasn't the correct height for the seat post.
Fair play.
Not something I would ever have thought of doing. We did do a video, I think probably 13 years ago. Mike Reese, one of our colleagues here, a long time, he had a felt bike which had a seized seat post in, and we made a video about trying to get it out. The video was 4 minutes long, I think. The actual process of getting the seat post out was about 4 hours long. They were a nightmare.
Oh, next up, this one has been sent in by Mark Van Lintel, a homemade ultrasonic wax pot. This has been another video that's been sent in. Apologies for the crappy video as well. Definitely not an influencer. I was trying to get optimal penetration in my wax chain for optimal efficiency. Wanted an ultrasonic cleaner, but can't justify the price for a single-use item. So I was looking for a solution. Found out my massage gun and rice cooker do virtually the same job for pennies on the dollar. The splashing usually does not happen, probably just because it's being filmed. Shortly after, you can see the sound waves forming. I'm having great results with this method. Love the show. Thank you. Bye.
You always seem to get the hacks and bodges that involve some sort of vibrating kind of, don't you?
I don't know why.
When you're on the show.
Send it for me. Yeah. I'm just watching the video now.
Bear with us.
Yeah. Where's the massage gun then?
Oh, I can't wait. There we go.
It's flipping
out. Oh, he doesn't even put it in.
No, he does on the side.
Oh, I see.
I mean, it's working, isn't it? You can see the vibrations. This is the sort of thing you're doing in your shed and your neighbour's like, what are they doing?
Imagine if someone looked in and just got a bowl of gunk with a massage gun on the side of it. I mean, I'm presuming you're going hack just for the...
Yeah, hack, yeah.
Just for the entertainment.
Yeah, right? I just love it.
I'll go hack with that one as well.
Anything with a massage gun.
Hock sent this one in. This light will never die. On a cycling holiday to Tenerife with some friends, picking up necessary supplies from a local supermarket, spotted a mountain bike parked outside with this bike light attached. The covering for the light obviously got smashed, but they refused to let it die, and this was the result. I think this is fantastic. I mean, this bike screams to me someone who can't afford too much when it comes to bikes and equipment. And so when their original bike light cover snapped or split, they just design a new one to keep it protected from the elements.
Yeah, great idea. This is something I was thinking about in Morocco when I lost my rear light because I only had a spare front light. And I was, all the ways you can make a front light a rear light and cover it with bottles and things like this. And this is a really good solution.
Yeah,
like that.
Hack. Okay, another hack from us.
Nice. Next up is Eric Linscott.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah, this is cool. So here is a picture of my Silicon Valley Racer, special build that's carried me speedily to and from work for a long time. Over the years, it became faster and faster, and in the end, I could pretty much keep up with or overtake the Class 3 Speed Pedelec e-bikes. Given the flat nature of the valley, weight was not much of an issue, but wind resistance was. The 1978 Schwinn Latour that I stuck with over the years, as it was the only bike I found with big enough that was a big enough frame, especially when on the aero bars. I'm 6'4". It's a 27-inch frame, and I think Schwinn may have only made that bigger frame that 1 year. Amazing! That's a frame for me, isn't it?
It is, yeah. A fence post.
Yeah. I love that.
It looks so big, if you're listening to this in podcast format, that those wheels look like 26-inch wheels.
They do, don't
they? I think that's in part down to the smaller tubing of the steel versus what we now have with the carbon fibre thicker set tubes. I just love the look of that bike. I'm not sure what it is about it. I'm sure some of you out there think this looks like a monstrosity, but I'm really into that. Doesn't look that easy to change gears, though. I presume that's the gear shift. Is that the gear shifter just behind the elbow pads on the bars? It's even got an adjustable stem. I mean, there's a lot going on with that, but I'm a fan. Flat pedals interest me as well.
Yeah, I like how you just upgraded this purely for like aero benefits to make the commute as fast as possible rather than trying to make it as super light.
It's certainly a stand-up. You look twice at that bike, don't you?
You would.
Maybe even three times.
Yeah.
It's a hack from me.
Nice one, yeah, hack from me too.
Hack so far. Yeah. Ricksky. Dipped beam headlights. I commute year-round on the Bristol to Bath railway path. Oh, you might have bumped into Si. He probably ignored you because he wants to do his own train, doesn't like talking to people on the way in. In the winter months, the etiquette is to cover your front light with a spare hand or at least tilt it down to avoid blinding anyone coming in the opposite direction. It can be quite busy at times, so you find yourself constantly covering the light as you pass people, which can be vexing to say the least. I've created this ingenious hands-free solution by cutting out a section of an old bank card and then taping it to the top top of my front light. I can now ride with the light on full power, not dazzling anyone coming in the opposite direction. What makes this an undeniable hack is colouring the car with permanent marker so it blends in seamlessly with the rest of the bike. I think this might be sarcastic. Assuming people will be adopting this hack in their masses, it is worth mentioning that an inactive card should be used.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm glad it's an old card, otherwise you just share your details with the entire GCN audience. Yeah. But, I mean, you obviously said it works, so I guess it's a good hack? I'd be worried it's going to just flop off in the wind.
But yeah, I'm not sure how it's been... It's glued on, as it said.
I think it's...
I probably just read out how it was done. I didn't actually listen to what I was saying myself.
I think it's, yeah, it's like kind of like a popsicle stick.
Or taping it to the top of my front light.
Yeah. Oh, I guess you can't... Have you chopped off... Yeah, you've chopped off a bit, so it's like a popsicle. Oh, yeah, that's going to stay put, isn't it?
We're a bit slow today. It's been a long bank holiday weekend, kind of, isn't it? I'm going to go with a full house of hacks today.
Yeah.
I mean, if it works, it's much better than taking one hand off your bars constantly when somebody's coming in the opposite direction. I was actually telling you my own very interesting story about full beam headlights before we started recording the show.
Yeah, you were.
So I'm currently in possession of a courtesy car. It's about a year old, it's a Volkswagen, and it must be one of those cars where the headlights, when they're not on full beam, are stupidly bright. You know, the types of cars you hate as they come towards you, because the whole way into work this morning, I did my commute in the dark. I constantly had people flashing me coming in the other direction because they thought I had my main beam on. I was having to flash back to sort of say, well, I don't know what I was saying, really. Like, I've got more power in the bank.
I'm just bright. It's just bright lights. I'm but sorry.
I was embarrassed because I was obviously blinding people. I can't figure out what to do at the moment. I presume I can sort of angle them down somehow. I'll have to work out that later. But yeah, I think it's a good idea to not blind people coming in opposite directions, basically what I'm saying. So I'm going with a hack for that as well.
Just get some more credit cards and tape them all on you.
Yeah, imagine that. Imagine that, yeah.
Yeah, nice. I'll go with a hack as well. Full house of hacks.
Very good.
Amazing.
Right, you can obviously get involved in this part of the show, ready for next week's GCN show. All you need to do is go to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader, where you can upload your own hacks or those that you see out and about.
Caption competition time now. Your chance to win a GCN Camelback water bottle. We had a pretty amazing photo, actually.
I know, I saw it, yeah.
Yeah. Sided tempted me to do a few euphemisms.
Did he?
I didn't rise to the bait.
No.
I did think of a few after the show.
Like, share them with us now?
No.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, no, I can't. It's just... No, I mean, Ollie would go there, I think, but I'm going to stay out of it.
Right, for those of you who didn't watch last week's show and are listening to this week's, the photo is of Wout van Aert at the Gent-Wevelgem race with a super fan who's got a Belgian flag-coloured cap, which says Wout on it, getting a little too intimate with his favourite cycling superstar. So intimate, his nose is basically smashed onto the top of his Red Bull helmet.
It's an incredible photo. I can't quite believe it. But we do have to pick a winner. There was plenty of options for this one. And the winner is Michael King, 01Q. Wout van Aert meets Snoutman Hurt.
Very good, Michael.
There you go.
We will be in touch. You should actually get in touch with us on Facebook with a message and your address, and we'll get a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle out to you. This photo for this week is equally as enthralling, I would say. This is the podium of the men's Dwars Dorf Landen race that we mentioned from last Wednesday, with Filippo Ganna on top of a sort of, almost looks like a rocking horse-sized horse, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
I mean, there are some bizarre prizes in the world of cycling, but this one is right up there with the best, I would say. I'll get you started. You see, I told you I'm an Italian stallion.
Oh dear, right, if you think you do better than Dan, let us know in the comments down below. I'm sure there'll be some good additions to this one. Thank you everyone.
At least it made Wout van Aert smile after an agonising defeat at the race, eh?
Yeah.
We will shortly let you know what's coming up on the channel this week, but first up, a load of comments from last week's videos. Connor's picked out the first one because, and he was so keen to share this, that he shared it with Si and the rest of the presenters on our WhatsApp group chat. Steve Smith, 9082, the braid Connor was talking about, we call it a rat's tail in Australia.
It made me chuckle because I actually lived with a load of Australians in Belgium when I was racing, and we had this thing about trying to grow a mullet and having a rat's tail in the mullet. So I think Si should go there. I think he should do it.
Well, I mean, he can carry off any haircut, as we've seen in recent weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, the comments absolutely do not go wild when he gets a youngster's haircut. Meanwhile, Problins wrote, definitely need to maintain paved roads, otherwise we're just incentivising more people to buy oversized SUVs, which are already an absolute pain in the body to share the road with.
Yeah, that's true. Although I think if it was gravel, they would be driving slower, but I mean...
Yeah, they would be. I overtook a couple of cars on my gravel ride yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah, a couple of the gravel sections I was on, a kind of residential street, so to speak. But they've got a few potholes, so the cars have to go slow.
Yeah.
One kindly sort of pulled over and let me past.
Oh, there you go. Dr. G wrote, most UK minor roads, certainly in my area, in such bad condition that I use a gravel bike on them. Anyway, for comfort, I'm 50-something, so I'm not aiming for the fastest possible setup.
This has regularly crossed my mind over the last couple of years of riding a gravel bike between gravel sectors. They are so good on the British potholed back lanes, aren't they? Because you're just not worried about smashing into something.
Yeah.
I still obviously try to avoid the holes that I see in front of me, but... You just have a lot more confidence in your own safety, don't you, with a gravel bike?
It is nice, especially around here. And I actually rode my Orbea Terra set up with the 40mm Pirelli tyres that Si has been using recently.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, oh, it's so nice.
It's like you're in heaven.
Yeah.
Just thinking
it's like you've just gone to Mallorca on a lovely tarmac,
nice.
But you're on this like.
But you're not.
Right? Yeah,
but you're definitely not. Finally, from last week's show, Keith Firmer. Connor laughing will never not be great. Him getting the giggles and nearly derailing things is one of my favourite parts of the show. Well, it almost happened during the Hacklebod section again, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. under my video, actually, last week, under Forgotten Training Zones, this is what actually makes you better. I spoke to a few different coaches to get their perspective on like what you should bring back to like what you should hone in terms of the basics when it comes to training. Andrew Murray, I ride my bike to enjoy and to stay fit. TM54561, Connor's always so thoughtful and insightful. His video is always really balanced and down to earth, it's really refreshing, and always enjoys his content. Thanks so much.
I feel like I could point out I picked that comment out. As he read it, he's like, oh, well, this is a very, very complimentary comment. I hope people don't think that I picked it out myself. The Zula One, I've been running and cycling for years, and what has actually made me better was not taking things too seriously, so I actually want to get out there. I don't race, and I don't care to. I do not want any of this to ever feel like a chore. I'm happy just to get out and explore around and have fun. A regular structured training plan would just make it kind of feel like working or something. I'll happily ride 15 hours a week. I just don't want to feel like I have to.
Which
is a very
sure.
good point. There are a lot of people that think in that very same way, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess most of us as presenters come from a racing background, so just naturally we think slightly differently.
Mm.
Yeah. Underneath Strive versus Survive, this is me and Si taking two different approaches to an upcoming gravel event called Seven Gravel, which we're taking part in over in Perth, Australia, or Nanup to be precise, in the middle of May. Charlie280801 to Dan. I did 2023 on my mountain bike, it took 8 hours 20 minutes with about 6 weeks of training, no coach of course, and walked a couple of climbs. Don't overthink it, just keep grinding and keep the gels, etc. flowing. Good advice, I think, for my current fitness levels.
Daniel Avis 3403 sent this one in. So, I was talking to one of your coaches today. You've got a lot of work to do.
Ah.
5 laughing faces.
You must have bumped into Simon Jones, Daniel, I can only presume. No, I expect you bumped into Stephen Gallagher, who was, I'm sure, taking the mick out of me, my current fitness levels. How much faster is a modern superbike at Paris-Roubaix? Bike rides, but I used a pair of those forks to win the Matsky-Roubaix Cat 3 race in 95. Glory was mine.
Emil Gagnon 4751, as a teacher of architectural history, this was pretty accurate. Architecture, history, handshakes, emoji with cycling history. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. That was easy for you to say, Connor, wasn't it?
Why were you stumbling on what that meant?
I was glad I was reading it at the same time, so I knew what it actually said. And finally, JK1984, why did it take so long to realise how much faster wider tyres and lower pressures really are? It's a very good question. I've said this before, but there used to be a website called Bike Tech Review with a very geeky forum on it. And within that forum, there was a couple of people who were constantly doing rolling resistance tests on all sorts of tyre, tubular, tyre-tube combinations. I don't think tubeless was out at the time. But back then, they did realise that wider tyres seemed to roll faster. I guess the problem was that rim manufacturers were still making narrower rims at the time, and so the aerodynamic component kind of outweighed the lesser rolling resistance you get from the wider tyres. But it does seem dumb in hindsight, because they're that much more comfortable, and given the fact that they are at least as fast, if not faster, we were just a long way behind the time somehow.
Yeah, and I guess with the introduction of disc brakes, it kind of allowed the freedom to...
That is very true,
design frames around those wider tyres.
Yeah, the rim calipers did hinder how wide your tyres could be, didn't they? Right then, coming up on the channels this week, going to start the GCN Racing Channel tomorrow. As mentioned earlier on, Connor and I are going to be recording the big Paris-Roubaix preview show later on today. We're hoping that will be out tomorrow, which is Wednesday. On Thursday, a look at a brand new, as yet, unreleased bike. There's an embargo on it, so we can't tell you anything about it right now, but you'll find out all about it when that video drops on Thursday.
Yep, then on Saturday, Si is delving into the topic of bike paths. Are bike paths fair? Been hearing his musings on this one, so I'm interested myself, actually, to see what he's investigated.
And then on Sunday, speed versus power, how to get the most from your power. I think this is one that Alex has been working on for the past few weeks. Right, I haven't thought of a nugget for the end of the show, Connor, and I don't think I'm going to be able to think of one on the spot. We're in a bit of a rush today because we've had Bank Holiday Monday in the UK, so already done the racing news show this morning, GCN show now, Roubaix preview show to get on. So apologies, no nugget, so thanks for getting to the end of the show with nothing to look forward to.
Thanks, everyone.